First then, if you're going to book a cruise getaway, well, let's hope it's a bit more relaxing than this one's been for Hercule Poirot.
My little holiday on the Nile has become a hideous nightmare. First, Jacqueline de Belfort shot and wounded her former fiancé, Simon Doyle, and then Doyle's wife, Lynette, was found murdered. And now, there has been a second murder. Colonel Race has discovered the body of Madame Doyle's maid, Louise Bourget, stabbed to death.
We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and Donald Sinden as Colonel Race in Agatha Christie's Death on the Nile.
Poirot, I want to talk to you. I've got an idea.
What is it, Colonel?
It's about that telegram you said Annette Doyle opened in error. Nothing in it, perhaps, but one can't leave any avenue unexplored. I mean, damn it all, man. Two murders and we're still in the dark.
No, not in the dark. In the light.
Well, you have an idea.
I see now that we must start again from the beginning. My first conception was entirely wrong.
I haven't the foggiest idea what you're getting at, Poirot. But if we have to go back to the beginning, let's go and talk to Doyle about that telegram.
Yes, I remember. It was at Wadi Haifa. We'd just come back from the Second Cataract. Well, Lynette thought she saw a telegram for her sticking up on the board. Well, she'd forgotten that she wasn't called Ridgway anymore, and Riquetti and Ridgway do look rather alike when written in atrocious handwriting.
And do you know what was in that telegram?
Lynette read part of it aloud. It said...
Mr. Doyle! Oh, excellent. Colonel Race and Monsieur Poirot are with you.
What is it, Mrs. Ottable?
Mr. Doyle, I know who killed your wife. It may appear impossible, but it is the truth. You agree that whoever killed Louise Bourget also killed your wife?
Yes, of course, that stands to reason.
I know who killed Louise Bourget, and therefore I know who killed Lynette Doyle.
You mean you have a theory as to who killed Louise Bourget?
No, I have exact knowledge. I saw the person with my own eyes.
Then if you know who killed Louise Bourget, for God's sake, tell us!
It was when I went down to lunch. We were halfway to the saloon when I remembered I had left something, and I told Rosalie to go on without me. I had an arrangement with one of the personnel of the ship. He was to get something I needed. I was to meet him on the stern of the deck below this.
Oh, for God's sake, get a move on.
Yes, come to the point, Mrs. Ottoborn.
As I reached there, a cabin door opened and Louise looked out. But when she saw it was me, she looked disappointed and closed it again. I got the stuff from the man and I started back. And just as I came round the corner, I saw someone knock on the door of her cabin and go in.
And who was this person, madame?
Oh, mon Dieu.
Is she dead?
Yes, Mr. Doyle. She's dead.
What the devil was that?
Did you encounter anyone on your way here?
No one. What's happened?
Madame Ottoborn has been shot. And I fancy with this revolver.
I rather think we've seen it somewhere before.
Yes, it is the revolver of Monsieur Pennington.
We'd better have a word with him.
I noticed him a little while ago. He is in the small drawing room.
Why, gentlemen, this is a very serious matter.
Very serious for you, Mr. Pennington.
For me, but my dear sirs, I was sitting quietly writing letters in here when that shot was fired.
But why should your revolver be used?
Well, I'm afraid I may be to blame there. We had a conversation in the saloon one evening about firearms, and I mentioned that I always carry a revolver with me when I travel.
Who was there?
I can't remember exactly. Most people, I think...
Monsieur Pennington, I would like to discuss certain details of the case with you. Will you come to my cabin in half an hour's time?
Why, yes, I should be delighted.
I'll never forget this trip as long as I live, Monsieur Perrault.
Ah, yes.
It's like being in a nightmare.
Well, what of it? They're no great loss.
Oh, you're wrong, Mr. Ferguson. It makes me sick to hear you talk as though nothing mattered in the world but you. Lynette Doyle was so beautiful when she came into a room that it made a lump come into your throat.
You're unbelievable. You haven't got a bit of natural spite in you anywhere. Do you know, Monsieur Poirot, that Cornelia's father was practically ruined by Lynette Ridgway's old man?
But that was all in the past. It's the future that matters.
Cornelia Robson, you're the only truly nice woman I've ever come across. Will you marry me?
Oh, don't be absurd.
It's a genuine proposal. You're my witness, Monsieur Poirot.
I think you're utterly ridiculous.
Why won't you marry me?
Because you laugh at all the things I love, All the really serious things. You wouldn't be reliable.
Damn the girl. I believe she means it. She wants a man to be reliable. Reliable? What do you think of her?
I think that she has a great deal of character.
You're right. She's got spirit. She's got guts. Damn it, I want that girl. It mightn't be a bad move if I tackled Miss Van Schuler. If I could get her thoroughly against me, it might cut some ice with Cornelia.
It's preposterous. You marry Cornelia, it's utterly out of the question.
You mean I'm not good enough for her?
There is such a thing as social position, Mr. Ferguson.
Social position is bunk, but I don't imagine I can convince you of that. Anyway, don't be too sure, Miss Van Schuler. I'll be calling you cousin yet.
What an uncouth, insolent young man.
Rather eccentric, I'm afraid. Most of that family are always inclined to tilt at windmills. You recognised him, I suppose?
Recognised him?
Yes, that's young Lord Dawlish. Rolling in money, of course. But he became a communist when he was at Oxford.
How long have you known this, Monsieur Poirot?
Ever since I found a signet ring with his family coat of arms on it. And now, if you will excuse me, I have more urgent matters to attend to.
So, what can I do for you, gentlemen?
I perceive, Mr. Fanthorpe, that you wear the same tie that my old friend Hastings wears.
It's an OE tie.
Exactement. You must understand that although I am a foreigner, I know something of the English point of view, and there are certain things that the old school tie does not do. One of those things is to butt into a private conversation when one does not know the people who are conducting it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think you do, Mr. Fanthorpe.
The other day you strolled over to Madame Doyle when she was in conversation with Mr. Pennington, and you tried to eavesdrop. And then you congratulated her on the soundness of her business methods. What was your object in that?
I had no object, I assure you, Monsieur Poirot.
I rather think you were trying to prevent Madame Doyle from signing any document unread.
If we tell you that the weapon which killed Mrs. Otterbourne was a revolver owned by Mr. Pennington, what? You will realize that it is your duty to tell us all you can.
Why did you come on this trip, Monsieur Fanthorpe?
Very well. My uncle, Mr. Carmichael, Lynette Doyle's English solicitor, sent me. He was often in correspondence with Mr. Pennington, who was Mrs. Doyle's American trustee. Several small incidents made my uncle suspicious that all was not as it should be.
In plain language, your uncle suspected that Pennington was a crook.
You put it rather more bluntly than I would, Colonel, but that was the general idea.
And there is your motive.
It's time for our meeting with Pennington.
Thank you for your assistance, Monsieur Fanthorpe.
Well, gentlemen, what can I do for you?
Tell me, Mr. Pennington, are Lynette Doyle's affairs in the proper order they should be?
They're in perfect order.
You were not then so alarmed when the news of Lynette Ridgway's marriage reached you that you rushed over on the first boat and staged an apparently fortuitous meeting in Egypt?
That's utter rubbish. I didn't even know Lynette was married until I met her in Cairo.
You came over on the Carmenach, I think you said.
That's right.
It is strange. All the labels on your luggage are from the Normandy, which sailed 2 days later.
Come on, Mr. Pennington. It's no good denying it. It's the easiest thing in the world to check with the steamship companies.
So what does it matter?
We believe that you came to Egypt post-haste to try and find some way out of the mess you are in. You endeavoured to obtain Madame Doyle's signature on certain documents, which you failed to do. And then, when walking along the clifftop at Abu Simbel, you dislodged a boulder which fell and narrowly missed Madame Doyle.
You're crazy!
Time will show.
What do you mean?
This is a matter of 3 deaths, 3 murders. The law will demand the most searching investigation into the condition of Madame Doyle's estate.
You've played and lost, Mr. Pennington.
You don't understand. Wall Street has been crazy. I mean, with luck, everything will be okay by June.
I suppose that the boulder was a sudden temptation. You thought nobody saw you.
That was an accident. I stumbled and fell upon it. It was an accident. And it wasn't me who shot her. You can't pin that one on me.
Well, we got more than I thought we should. Admission of fraud, admission of attempted murder. Further than that, it's impossible to go. You won't get him to confess to the real thing.
Paddington did not do it.
What?
He did not do it. He had the motive, yes. He even got so far as attempting it. But this crime needed something he did not have. It needed audacity.
Have you got it all worked out?
Yes. Let us send for Tim Allerton.
So, what can I do for you, Monsieur Poirot?
I wish to speak of your cousin Joanna Southwood.
What about her?
I have been hearing quite a lot of that name recently from Inspector Japp at New Scotland Yard.
Really?
Yes. For some time now, he has been concerned about certain jewel robberies. They are what might be described as society robberies. The method is usually the same. The substitution of an imitation piece of jewellery. Inspector Japp came to the conclusion that the robberies were the work of two people, probably of good social position, and his attention became centred on Joanna Southwood. Every one of the victims had been a friend or an acquaintance of hers, and in each case she had either handled or been lent the piece of jewellery in question.
I see. Go on.
On the other hand, it was quite clear that the actual robbery, that is to say, the actual substitution, was not her work. It was carried out by someone who could have been proved never to have handled the jewels or to have been involved in the copying of them. Of the identity of this person, Japp was ignorant.
What exactly are you driving at, Poirot?
Now, patience, my friend. Certain things which you said, Mr. Allerton, interested me. You mentioned that a fake substitution had occurred at a house party where you had been a guest. And when Madame Doyle's pearls were stolen, my suspicions were aroused. And when the pearls were returned and transpired to be imitation, I was certain that you were involved.
And what am I supposed to have done with the pearls?
They are concealed in the beads of a rosary that hangs in your cabin.
Well, it's been a good game, Monsieur Poirot. There's nothing for it now, I suppose, but to take my medicine.
Do you realize that you were seen that night?
Seen?
Someone saw you coming out of Lynette Doyle's cabin just after 1 a.m, the night she was murdered.
Look, you can't be thinking. I didn't kill her. I've been in the most awful stew. To have picked that night of all nights. Who was it saw me?
Rosalie Otterbourne.
So it was she who told you?
Certainly not. I am Hercule Poirot, and I do not need to be told. When I taxed her with it, she told me that she saw nobody. And she lied.
She's an extraordinary sort of a girl. She must have had a pretty rough time with that mother of hers.
Yes, life has not been easy for her.
So, Poirot, where do we go from here?
Look, I admit taking the pearls from Lynette's cabin. You'll find they're just where you say they are. I'm guilty, all right. But as far as Miss Southwood's concerned, I'm admitting nothing. How I got hold of the fake necklace is my own business.
A very correct attitude.
Always the gentleman.
And now I am going to ask Miss Otterbourne if she will join us.
So it was you who took the pearls, but you didn't.
No, I didn't kill Lynette. I'm a thief, not a murderer.
Of course, we only have your word for that.
You may have stolen the pearls before last night. Suppose she had found out and threatened to expose the whole business, and that you took advantage of the confusion after Jacqueline de Belfort shot Simon Doyle to steal the pistol and make certain that Lynette Doyle would keep silent forever.
I swear it isn't true.
Of course it isn't true, and Monsieur Poirot knows it isn't true.
Mademoiselle is too clever. But there could be a clear case against you, Monsieur Allerton. I just wanted you to realize that. Now, I will tell you something a little more pleasant. If Mademoiselle Otterbourne sticks to her story that she saw no one on the deck last night, there is no case against you. The pearls were taken by a kleptomaniac who has since returned them. They are in a little box on the table by the door. Perhaps you would care to take them away and examine them with Mademoiselle?
Give them to me. There. They've gone. And when I return the box to Monsieur Poirot, the real pearls will be in it. What a damned fool I've been.
Why did you do it in the first place?
Boredom. Laziness? The fun of the thing. I suppose it was mainly the risk.
I think I understand.
And without the money, I wouldn't be here. And I wouldn't have met you. Why didn't you say that you saw me last night?
I thought they might suspect you.
Did you suspect me?
No. I couldn't believe that you'd kill anyone.
Rosalie, do you think you could... I mean, would you... Or will you always throw this back in my face?
There are things that you could throw in my face, too.
Rosalie.
This Joanna Southwood.
Oh, you're as bad as my mother. I don't care about Joanna. She's got a predatory eye and a face like a horse.
Now, look here, I'm a patient man, Poirot, but there are limits to my patience. Do you know who committed these three murders on this boat, or don't you?
I do.
Then let's have no more beating about the bush. It wasn't Allerton, it wasn't Pennington. Who was it, then?
My friend, I am about to tell you.
I'm sorry to disturb you, Monsieur Poirot, but Miss Robson wishes to speak to you.
Miss Bowers has just told me about Cousin Marie and the pearls. I couldn't believe it at first, but... Dr. Bessner has been simply wonderful.
I simply explained that kleptomania is a medical condition like any other.
But I'm terribly worried in case it all gets out.
I have no fear, Miss Robson. Monsieur Poirot and I are getting accustomed to overlooking these little peccadilloes.
I beg your pardon, Colonel Race.
Well, I mean that anything short of murder is being hushed up.
Oh, I'm so relieved.
And have you heard any more from Mr. Ferguson?
No, but Cousin Marie told me he's got a title of some sort. As far as I'm concerned, he's even more out of the question now. And besides, Dr. Bessner...
I understand. Now, tell me, Doctor, how is Mr. Doyle?
Oh, he's going on splendidly.
Oh, then since he's all right, there's no reason why we shouldn't ask him about that telegram.
Ah, that was very funny. He told me all about it. The telegram was just a list of vegetables, potatoes, artichokes.
My God! So it was him, Ricchetti.
I'm sorry?
It's a new code. We first encountered it on the uprising 6 months ago. Potatoes means machine guns. Artichokes are high explosives. And so on. Ricchetti is no more an archaeologist than I am. He's a dangerous agitator who's killed more than once in the past and has probably done so again. He is our man, Poirot.
He is your man, Colonel. But it was not Ricchetti who killed Lynette Doyle. I know who the murderer is. But although I know what happened, I have no proof.
But who is it? Aren't you going to tell us?
I think the time has come, Poirot.
Very well, then. You and I, Colonel, started our investigation with a preconceived idea. That idea was that the crime was committed on the spur of the moment without any previous planning. But now, I know that this was no spontaneous crime.
But what gave you the first hint that the crime was not spontaneous?
It was when the pistol was retrieved from the Nile. Huh? The weapon was wrapped in a velvet stole with a handkerchief showing a faint pink stain. When you examined Lynette Doyle's body, Doctor, what was it that you observed about the wound?
There were signs of scorching. The pistol had obviously been placed close against the head before being fired.
But the stole, you see, showed definite signs that the pistol had been fired through it. Therefore, that could not have been the shot which killed Lynette Doyle. For then, there would have been no scorch marks on the wound.
And then it must have been the shot fired by Jacqueline de Belfort.
But I was there, and the pistol certainly wasn't wrapped in any stole.
Exactly. So, a third shot must have been fired.
But how? When?
The next interesting point was the fact that in Lynette Doyle's cabin I found two bottles of colored nail varnish. One contained only a few drops of a bright red liquid, which was, in fact, red ink.
So that was what had stained the handkerchief. Red ink washes out but always leaves a pink stain.
The next clue was something I realized far too late. When I was questioning Louise Bourget in Simon Doyle's cabin, she was very careful to suggest that if she had mounted the stairs from her cabin that night, she would have seen the murderer. Now, why do that? Because she was letting the murderer know that she had witnessed the crime. But apart from Colonel Race and myself, the only people present were Simon Doyle and Dr. Bessner.
Now, look here. You are surely not suggesting
I am only letting you follow the workings of my mind, Doctor. The reaction of the little grey cells. It was obvious that Louise Bourget's words could only have been intended for Simon Doyle.
But how could a man with a fractured bone and a splint on his leg go about the boat murdering people? It does not make sense.
Exactly, Doctor. It did not make sense. So I had to go back to the beginning. Was it possible for Simon Doyle to have murdered his wife? Had he left the saloon at any point before his quarrel with Jacqueline de Belfort?
No, he was there all the time. I would have noticed.
And then I realized that there was a time when he had been left alone for at least 5 minutes after the shot had been fired and before Dr. Bessner arrived to give his expert testimony about the wound. When Jacqueline de Belfort had shot Mr. Doyle, Miss Robson, what did you see?
He collapsed on a chair with the handkerchief to his leg. You could see the blood soaking through. You mean it wasn't blood?
Precisely, mademoiselle. It was red ink.
And Mr. Doyle was most insistent that I should get Mr. Belfort away and not leave her alone. And he sent Mr. Fanthorpe to find Miss Bowers.
For the next 5 minutes, everyone is occupied on the port side. Simon Doyle picks up the pistol from under the sofa where Jacqueline de Belfort had kicked it, runs silently to the starboard deck, enters his wife's cabin, and shoots her through the head, puts the bottle, which had contained the red ink, on the dressing table, runs back, gets hold of Miss Van Schuler's stole, which he had stuffed down the side of his chair, wraps it around the pistol, and shoots himself in the leg. His chair is by the window. He has just enough strength to lift the window and to throw the pistol, and with it the stole and the handkerchief, into the Nile.
Ah, no, no, it's just not possible, Poirot. Nobody could think all that up by himself on the spur of the moment.
But as I have told you, it was not on the spur of the moment, nor did he think it up by himself. Everything depended on Jacqueline de Belfort kicking the pistol under the settee.
Jacqueline?
Certainly. The two halves of the murder. What gave Doyle his alibi? The shot fired by Jacqueline. What gave Jacqueline her alibi? The insistence of Simon Doyle that she should have a hospital nurse staying with her all night. There, between the two of them, you get all the qualities you require. The cool, resourceful, planning brain, Jacqueline de Belfort, and the man of action to carry it out. It answers every question. Simon Doyle and Jacqueline had been lovers. Realize that they are still lovers, and everything is clear. Simon Doyle does away with his rich wife, inherits her money, and in due course will return to his former love.
So it was Jacqueline de Belfort who killed Louise Bourget?
Yes.
And Mrs. Otterbourne?
Do you remember how Simon shouted at the poor woman? The door was open, and he was trying to warn Jacqueline. She heard, and she acted like lightning. She remembered Pennington had talked about having a revolver. She got hold of it, and at the critical moment, fired.
And what happened to the first bullet fired at Doyle by the girl?
I think it went into the table.
It seems they had thought of everything.
No. You are wrong. They did not think of Hercule Poirot.
You were too clever for us. I'd have bluffed you out, but you sprang it on Simon and he went down like a ninepin, lost his head and admitted everything. He's a bad loser.
But you, mademoiselle, are a good loser.
Oh, yes. But I'm not a safe person any longer. It all seemed so simple to begin with. Simon and I really did love one another.
And for you, love would have been everything. But not for him.
He's always wanted money so dreadfully. He's awfully simple. He wants things just as a child wants them.
And the job of land agent which you had persuaded your old friend Lynette Doyle to offer him was not enough to satisfy his greed?
You know, Lynette went all out to get Simon away from me. I was her friend, but she didn't care.
And what was his reaction?
He didn't give a damn about her. The whole thing embarrassed him dreadfully. But he did like the thought of her money.
And then?
And then one day he said, if I'd any luck, I'd marry her and she'd die in about a year and leave me the lot. And then a queer look came into his eyes. But I realised that he'd never pull it off by himself. So I had to come into it. To look after him. At a Swan, you warned me about opening my heart to evil.
Mm-hmm.
I could have pulled back then, but I didn't. And after that, it all became so horribly, frighteningly easy. I suppose when we get to Shillelagh, you're going to hand us over to the police?
I have no alternative, mademoiselle.
Don't mind too much for me, Monsieur Poirot.
They're bringing Doyle off on a stretcher. Remarkable how he just went to pieces. I'm sorry for the gale, but there's nothing to be done about it.
People say love justifies everything, but that is not true. Women who care for men as much as Jacqueline does for Simon are very dangerous.
We've got Mr. Doyle here, Colonel. Shall we take him ashore?
Yes, let's not waste any more time. The passengers will want to get off.
Hello, Simon.
Jackie. I messed it up. Lost my head and admitted everything. Sorry, I've let you down.
Shh, don't give it a thought. Fool's game, and we lost. That's all. Goodbye, Monsieur Poirot.
Where the devil did she get that pistol?
Did you know she had the pistol, Monsieur Poirot?
She had a pair of pistols. I realized that when I heard that one had been found in Rosalie Otterborn's handbag. Jacqueline must have slipped it in there when she knew there was going to be a search of the passengers and retrieved later.
Did you want her to take that way out?
I did, Mrs. Allerton. But I knew she would not take it alone. That is why Simon Doyle has died an easier death than he deserved.
Love can be a very frightening thing.
That is why all love stories end in tragedy, madame.
A very messy business, but I think I've got everything sorted out with the local police. I suppose you'll be off back home now, Poirot?
Ah, yes, but I shall make a very leisurely return. I plan to visit Jerusalem and perhaps a little excursion to Petra.
I'm glad to see you haven't lost your appetite for sightseeing, Monsieur Poirot.
There is one thing in Hercule Poirot that nothing can extinguish.
What is that, my friend?
My curiosity.
In the final part of Agatha Christie's Death on the Nile, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat and Colonel Race by Donald Sinden. Jacqueline de Belfort, Amanda Barton Chapel, Simon Doyle, Robert Dawes, Mrs. Allerton, Rosemary Leach, Tim Allerton, Nicholas Bolton. Mrs. Otterborn, Shirley Dixon, Rosalie Otterborn, Emma Woodvine, Miss Van Schuler, Irene Sutcliffe, Cornelia, Teresa Gallagher. Pennington, Stratford Johns, Dr. Bessner, Keith Drinkle, Ferguson, Robert Portal, Fanthorpe, Roger May. Other parts were played by members of the cast. Death on the Nile was dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.
After the weekend, we'll begin another thriller in which a young woman skilled in computing is drawn into a spy adventure. Angela Pleasance stars in The Joke About Hilary Spite throughout next week at the same time.